On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina.
All right, everybody, I'm here with Mia Salvamini of the Tampa Bay Rays organization. Mia, thank you for coming on. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, so I'm currently the low-A strength and conditioning coach for the Charleston River Dogs of the Tampa Bay Rays, and I primarily oversee all of their strength and conditioning programs, speed, agility, base running, lifting, etc. But for the journey, I'm originally from Connecticut, and I decided to go to University of Tampa for school because of the weather. Primarily, I was sick of the cold. I wanted to get out of there and get a little bit of a break. And then as far as baseball, I was never really like into baseball as a kid. Like I never played Little League. I never did any of that. But my point when I fell in love with baseball was in one summer in college, I moved to Jupiter, Florida, and did an internship at Cressy Sports Performance. So that was kind of my intro into the baseball world, and I fell in love with it. And then at that point, when I went back to college after that summer, I was like, I need to stay in this realm. Like, I want to be exposed to as much as I can as far as a strength and conditioning standpoint, a baseball standpoint. So I interned with my college, University of Tampa's strength and conditioning. And the head strength coach there was nice enough to let me work with the baseball team primarily. And so I programmed for some of those pitchers there and got more experience and got my feet wet a little bit. And then after that time, I interned at Diesel Fitness in Tampa. I'm sure you've heard of that one too. It's a lot of pro guys go there. And then I also worked under a guy named Yo Murphy. He trains NFL guys and baseball guys. He actually has, I worked with one of your guys, Rafael Devers, for a while. Yeah, so it was funny. He actually lived in the same apartment complex as me, too. So I would see him, like, on his balcony and stuff. Probably doesn't live there anymore. I heard he's got a lot of money now, but...
yeah, just a little bit in the bank. Then from there, right to pro ball?
Yeah, so I was lucky. Like, I pretty much got my dream job out of college. The Tampa Bay Rays have been the only organization that I've ever worked for as like a full adult. So I started there when I was 21 and been there ever since.
So this was year what for you?
Three.
Year three. Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You checked like all the big Tampa boxes. When you said Tampa, I was like, all right, University of Tampa baseball is really good. Diesel, I believe Larry worked there for a bit.
Yeah, Larry, okay. Yeah.
And we're obviously, yeah, Yo Murphy with Rafi and the other baseball guys there.
So yeah.
you checked all the baseball boxes and then obviously the Cressy internship as well. So that's awesome that you kind of found your niche just out of the blue like that. And obviously it seems like you love it now. You got a big smile talking about it. Going into the next question, what is your best professional baseball story that you have? Either just one major achievement or something that makes you smile or just, you know, what's your best memory so far?
I guess I would say like being part of a championship team for the past 3 years, and not many people can say every year that they've worked in baseball, they've won a championship, they've got a ring. I don't know what it's like to lose. I'm not looking forward to finding out.
So same level, different level?
So for my first year, I was in the FCL. And towards the end of the season, we had a strength coach that needed to go on leave. So I went up to Charleston and covered for him for the last 6 weeks of the season, which is like the perfect time because it was playoffs. It was like exciting. So I was with them for their championship. And then last year I was in Charleston for the full season. And then this past season as well.
Okay. So. We'll get back to Charleston towards the end of this, I think. Yeah. But okay. So first of all, awesome. Three championships. Second of all, yeah, losing, it's not fun. I don't have any, I mean, we won a World Series in 2018, you know, and the whole organization gets rings, but I wasn't like in the big leagues. I was in Double A at the time. Mm-hmm. And my first year in the big leagues, like we made it to the ALCS, like, you know, really successful season. And then the next year we didn't make the playoffs and it was like, this really sucks. Like really, really sucks. So enjoy the wins because they're not always easy to come by. I don't know a lot of people with three rings, regardless of what level it is. That's very cool. And I didn't know that. I mean, I knew the most recent one. I had seen it on your Instagram very recently, but yeah. I didn't know three. So that's awesome. Hopefully you never have to experience losing. I think at some point.
I know, right?
You probably will. Yeah. But that's all right. It's all part of it. So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Okay, hear me out. So when I was 14, my intro into pretty much any type of strength and conditioning, any type of exercise was CrossFit because my mom used to take me to the gym and for a while I couldn't participate because I was young. And then finally, when I was able to, I kind of went ham. And so I have been doing that ever since. And there's definitely a lot of CrossFit haters out there. I probably first experienced that when I went to Cressy and they were like, what? CrossFit. So I know that it's changed me a lot. I've done competitions. It gives me something to look forward to. I love pushing my body to that extent. Obviously, when it comes to strength and conditioning and training baseball players, it's not as applicable. But I feel like having that background and knowing, like, you know, how to breed that competition aspect. And also like just the fact, like a lot of players after they're done with their careers dive into that because they're still looking for that competitive aspect in their everyday life after they've retired. But it taught me my foundations for Olympic weightlifting and stuff like that. And that I feel like has been very helpful for me as far as like, you know, coming from a strength perspective.
I wholeheartedly, I won't bash you on this one because I actually, I have a friend who I went to college with. He's run a CrossFit gym for a long time. I guess it's just fitness gym now or whatever. But
yeah,
you know, I've gone over there and trained with him. And the thing is, like, a lot of people are starting to specialize their kids at younger and younger ages. And for me, I think kids are starting to miss just those general concepts of like controlling your body weight, being strong, being, you know, well-conditioned. Like there's a lot of different aspects of just being generally fit that I think are being missed out on with this next wave of players coming up. And I don't know if it's like that in other sports. I mean, I haven't, you know, dove in with other people and maybe that's something I need to do, but I just think the bashing, it's probably like, I don't know, maybe people just don't know or anything. It's like, you know, coaches that are like big and strong and never run and they just like bash running. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you have to be able to run. Like I can tell you this guy's going to probably run at least 3 to 5 miles today as a center fielder, like every single day. So like he has to have some conditioning level underneath his, like his legs to play. And again, I would agree with you. I don't know how applicable it is to baseball and all of the things, but I do think, generally speaking, like for me, I really think kids need just like gymnastics, obstacle courses, being able to control their body weight. I've seen you do like handstand walks on your Instagram, and I'm like, like that. I mean, you have strong shoulders. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like that kind of general, philosophy of just being well-rounded for me has always really made sense to me as a person. Some of the things they go ahead.
I definitely feel like there's things that I do now that I wouldn't do when I first started out in doing CrossFit because I know that it's not good for me. Like I know how this makes me feel. I know that my neck's going to hurt if I do 50 handstand push-ups the next day. Like there's things that I definitely scale back from a strength and conditioning aspect just within myself. And I know that a lot of the CrossFit, like the stigma with it is that Like, you need to have a good gym and a good trainer and a good onboarding process in order to be successful in it, because otherwise then the risk of injury skyrockets. So I get that part of it.
Yeah, that's, I was going to get there eventually. It's just like the, I think a lot of the bashing back in the day was just like, oh, this is kind of random. There's no rhyme or reason. Where like a lot of the coaches now, it's kind of the same with some of the CrossFitters too. Like they have, they're well versed in just the exercise science, the strength and conditioning aspect, and they can kind of tailor their programs accordingly. It's not just everybody doing the same thing randomly all the time. Like,
yeah,
there is more like rhyme or reason to it. There is more like an overall programming approach to it. Like I said, I have a guy I went to college with, so I've seen some of his programming and stuff. Like a lot of it makes a lot more sense now. And I think some of that is like the popularity of it, like being on TV and things like that. Like
people
want to just be generally fit, and like, if you go there and you don't get fit or you get hurt, like you don't come back. So those gyms lose money. So like,
yeah,
to keep your gym running, you have to be good at what you do. You have to write good programs and get results. And like you said, I think there's, you know, if you combine the strength and conditioning knowledge that you have with some of the general principles they have, I think it's applicable, you know, early off season, just, you know, those GPP phases, and then some of the stuff you get closer to, you know, games or whatever, for any sport, not just baseball, but in general, like, you know, you scale more specifically to that. But I don't know, I've never had a problem with people who are just generally fit and strong and healthy and well conditioned and, you know, can run distance or can run sprints. Like, I've never thought that being fit was an issue for sport. I don't know, maybe we're both crazy in that aspect, but I just think that the guys that are better fit and just well conditioned like last longer during the season, because it's
100%
grind, absolutely. Yeah. So, and as you move up, it gets harder too. So you'll see, that, you know, 162 games in 180 days, playing across the time zones and everything. Like being in good shape just helps you recover better for, you know, the next game. Like I said, if you're an outfielder, you're going to run 3 to 5 miles a game, like guaranteed, even just running back and forth from the dugout. So like, if your legs aren't under you and then you go to hit, like you don't have that base of power. Like there's a whole like cascade of things that, you know, it just, we see that, but I think sometimes people just bash it because they just don't know, or, you know, it's not in their box. They're not as open-minded. So
Yeah,
I won't bash you for that one. I don't think you're crazy, but so what do you think makes a strength and conditioning coach successful?
Well, I think it's a lot of things. Number one, I'd say adaptability, like thinking on the fly, whether it's like a time crunch before the game where you have to get a lift in, or a rain delay, or, you know, the tarps on the field, just making sure that you're able to adjust those situations and roll with the punches. And then I think also being creative is very important. I know a lot of times I have, like, we've had not so nice gyms on the road when we go to different affiliates, and some of the lifting might be done either in their gym or in the hotel. And sometimes to switch it up, I'll do like a pool workout with the guys where like the pitchers will come in at like 30 minutes ahead of the position players, and we'll do like a generalized conditioning type of circuit in the pool. And then the next group will come in all within like an hour, but that's something where they get their work in. It's a little bit more on the recovery side of things. And it's just, I love stuff like that. Like when we go to Myrtle Beach, I'll always try to do a beach workout with them on the sand. And then after, like if they want to go in and swim in the ocean, they do. And they always have fun with that. Like I like to switch it up. I always try to do yoga. Some players love it, some players hate it. They're like, Mia doesn't have the cone set up, that means we're in for a yoga session today for part of our warm-up. So but I think just giving them the tools to be able to, you know, develop as athletes, but also I think just being a genuine human being, being a genuine good human being, developing rapport, actually caring about the players, caring about the coaches and the people that you work with, because I feel like at the end of the day, we spend more time with these people than we do with our own family, and they become part of our family. And then the last thing that I would say on that is probably communication, just making sure that there's communication between all departments, even within affiliates, like all affiliates. So like I'll talk to the strength coach in Bowling Green, I'll talk to the strength coach in AA and AAA, and just like bounce ideas off of each other, or whether it's between the athletic trainer or the medical coordinator, just making sure that everybody's on the same page. We did a lot of work this year incorporating like the hitting coach into a lot of our drills and warm up, especially before the cages, just because I can't be everywhere at once. So like I'll give him a list of exercises. We worked a lot with the chaos bags this year. Stuff that's easy for them to explain to the players, that once they get in there, they'll have that routine of, oh, like I know that I need to do X, X, and X before I hit. And so I think having that communication has been like night and day game changer.
Yeah, those are all really good points. I do probably have a further like a follow-up question to this. So you talk about, you know, developing like general athletes at the lower level, and you know, you have some freedom. Like, is there like a set program that you're doing? Do you have kind of the autonomy to like play with, you know, how you feel? Like, how does that structure look like up and down? Like when players move up from Charleston,
yeah,
like what is your goal to like have them prepared for? Or is it kind of just like level to level is different?
I would say level to level, it's pretty similar. There's definitely a foundation that we go off of. We have 2 to 3 lifts per week per athlete, whether it's a pitcher or a position player. And I usually write out like 3 different workouts on the board and rotate them every 4 weeks, with a week that we're on the road being sort of like a deload week for them. So, yeah, so I do like 1 lift that's like more power based, 1 lift that's more like strength speed, and 1 lift that's more absolute speed. And then they rotate between those 3 lifts. But then for their B block with their accessory work, it's usually more individualized towards the athlete. And because our gym is like the size of probably like an average Boston apartment, I make sure that they rotate through in like a cyclical kind of action. So they'll go through their A block, they'll do 1 set of each exercise, and then go back through before they get to the next set.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. With the, I'm always curious in the minor leagues, just like you said, facilities aren't always great. And, you know, sometimes like weirdly, like an A ball team will have like a huge weight room, and then like you'll move up to double A and it's like a small weight room, and like you have to adjust everything. And obviously the travel is different and the schedule is different. And the one thing with that is like the last, I think 2 years now, the schedule has been a little bit different because of COVID. Do you think that's helped you in like getting programming and buy-in, or is it like making things more chaotic because you're on the road longer? You know what I mean?
Well, to be honest, I would say that I don't know anything else, because since I've started, we've had this 6-day and 1 day at home off day, and then 6 day. So I think it helps to have that 6 days, just making sure, like usually when I'm on the road for a 6-day trip, I'll do no lift on Tuesday because it's kind of chaotic and we're just getting to the field. We usually haven't checked into the hotel before the game. So I'll do 1 lift on Wednesday for position players, all of them, 2 gym buses separate. And then I'll do another lift later in the week, like on a Friday. And then between those times, I'll take that afternoon window. We usually get an hour in the afternoon that the other affiliate provides us, and I'll lift pitchers during that window from the game from the night before. So that's how I kind of like rotate it through. For relievers, it's a little bit tough, but I make sure to get them to have their first lift of the week early in the week, regardless of if they pitched or not yet.
Yeah, I feel like as guys move up, at some point they're going to have to lift on a day they pitch. So it's almost like, you know,
just yeah, a lot of guys like are very opposed to that. And then they'll do it once, and then they're like, I pitch good, so now I have to lift every time again.
I'm like, oh yeah.
It doesn't have as much of an effect.
The routine changes based on the results always.
Yep.
If you jump rope that day and you hit a home run, you got to jump rope every day. If you lifted and you struck out four times, you're never lifting again. But yeah, I would imagine, like, I moved up in 21, so I actually didn't have that schedule. And there was a time we had a 10-day road trip in 2019 when I was in AAA, and it was like we flew into a city and then like that morning and then played that night. And then, you know, we go to the next city, and then the back half of it was like we flew into Philly in the morning, we drove to Lehigh, we played a night game, and then the next day we had like a 10:30 kids game. And then we drove to Syracuse, and then we played two games in Syracuse, and then we drove to Pawtucket, and it was like unpack the trunk, pack the trunk, unpack the trunk. And I was like, when am I supposed to like get these guys to lift? Like,
I don't think like people realize
stuff. Yeah, it's
how
crazy.
Much travel affects it too. Like that day, I mean, I don't want to say this, but kind of like usually when we play on a Tuesday and it's right after the off day and we're on the road, we lose because we're just not hydrated or we're adjusting to being away on the road, new clubhouse, like new change of scenery, like, you know, fatigue, whatever it is. It's just, it's so much better when you're at home, but also when you're on the road and it's like later in the week where you have like that foundation of like, I know where this is, the field's over here, the cages are over here. It just becomes a little bit more routine.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing is like when you go to a new city and you just don't know what's available to you, what the layout is. And then, like I said, we played, you know, two games in a city. So it's like the first day you get your bearings and the second day you got to pack and leave. And we're just like, what is going on here? And, so, yeah, it's definitely it definitely plays into it. And then I've noticed the same thing, like usually after an off day, guys are a little bit more sluggish. Like, I mean, I think sometimes guys don't do anything on the off day.
Yeah.
We had back in 2020 when we had our alt site, we were doing, you know, force plates there, and we were trying to do it the day after an off day. And we had two separate incidents where one, the guy's jump was just horrendous. And we were like, what did you do yesterday? And he was like, I didn't get out of bed. And we were like, what? And he's like, I didn't even open my curtains. I just laid in bed. And the only time I got up was for my Uber Eats. And I was like, you know, and then the other was like, you know, we had a starting pitcher and he was throwing in the, you know, the inner squad we were having and his velo was way down. And we're like, what did you do yesterday? Like, no, I didn't do anything. I chilled. And we're like, and it was like, you know, an earlier scrimmage. So he was like rolled out of bed and went to pitch. And we were like, dude, we got to clean this up, like this, you know. But it was really eye opening for me to be like, you know, if I know this is coming, like, how do I combat that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if I know we have a day after an off day, like, how do I adjust things to just get guys going and just give them something to just like get the spark going a little bit and like hopefully pull out a win. But like you said, most of the time it's like, it's just brutal to watch. And then once you get your feet under you, then you're like, okay, like it's fine now. But, you know, sometimes, especially, you know, the higher up you go, and then like for us in the AL East, like every game really matters. So it's like, you almost have to like find ways to just get ahead of that. And it's not easy to do. It's really, really not. But I have noticed the same thing with off days and just sluggishness. And I think, like you said, being in the same place for 6 days, I think by the end, you're probably like, all right, get me out of this place. But that like midweek, you're like kind of hitting your sweet spot. What's the longest that you guys travel in that league?
Well, 6 days, but sometimes we'll do back to back. So it could be up to 12 days, really.
What about distance, like city-wise? What's the furthest from Charleston?
Delmarva, which is in Maryland. So that takes about, I mean, I always overestimate. They get mad at me because I'm always like, if it's 7-hour trip, it's really a 9-hour trip.
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah, of course.
That's about like 9
okay.
hours. Yeah, that's the furthest we went.
It's a long time on a bus. People don't realize, like.
I know. Yeah, and even when we stop. I think, I don't know if it's the strength coach in me, but when we stop, I'm like, guys, like, do not sit on the bus. Get up, move your feet.
Get up, stretch, like, move
use
around.
This opportunity.
Like, yes, exactly. Because, you know, some of those guys, we had one, and I think it was my first or second year in AA. He had one of those video game things that goes on the seat.
A monitor?
Yes.
Yeah, we have one guy that has a monitor, a headset, everything. He's locked and loaded in the bus the whole
right,
trip.
But instead of facing forward in the seat, he had his legs out the seat into the aisle, and then he was turned like this, video games for the whole road trip.
Ouch.
For like 6+ hours. And then he came in the next day. He's like, dude, my neck is jacked up.
I wonder why.
Yeah, like you just sat like that on the bus. Dude, I know, but I had to play my game. So like that kind of stuff also plays into it that,
yeah,
you know, maybe in some other sections of strength and conditioning, you don't even think about because it's not a thing. You know what I mean? And like, mm-hmm, that's another layer of like what we have to, you know, take into consideration for guys to,
yeah,
ready to play. So how about advice for others in the field, either young coaches looking to get in or older coaches that have been around that just want to stay on top of things?
Yeah. I feel like I have a different perspective when it comes to this being a female. There's been a lot of challenges. I was the first woman that the Rays ever had full time at an affiliate. And so I think, you know, that came with a lot of pros and cons, but I think the more experience you get under your belt, the better it becomes. And I would say like one big thing is if you want to be successful in baseball, like learn Spanish. I'm fluent at this point, I would say. And I think just be open. Nobody has all the answers. You can always learn something new from somebody else. So.
Yeah, the Spanish thing is just really, really valuable, especially at the younger levels. You know, you can kind of exchange English with some of the guys and they'll exchange the Spanish with you. And I think learning baseball Spanish is a little bit different than like Duolingo Spanish.
100%.
But it helps a lot. It really, really does. And like guys,
it also helps like build rapport, like at
yes,
this
exactly.
young level. Like they're coming from these countries. They don't know, you know, anything about the U.S. They're coming, it's their first time in the States, and they're surrounded by people that don't speak the language that they're used to. And I think like building that rapport and being able to communicate with them and like them having somebody to turn to at an affiliate to ask questions like is huge. So.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. That's exactly what I was thinking, is just a lot of times like those guys just don't know what they don't know. And, you know, it's a big culture shock. And, you know, I always say, like, just try to put yourself in their shoes. Like if you went to a country and you didn't know the language and you had to try to get yourself around and, you know, play the sport and learn how to feed yourself away from the ballpark. And like, you know, American food is different, obviously. Like there's all these factors that like, for us, it's, you know, sometimes we don't think about it because it's comfortable. That's, you know, that's how we grew up. That's where we're at. And then it's like, you know, imagine if, you know, I got placed in Germany and I had to go play soccer there. Like, you know what I mean? I'd be like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And like, you know, even just learning the system and everything, like, you know, the baseball system and
the,
you know,
American coaches. Players, like they can have family visit, but a lot of these players that are coming from the DR and Venezuela, like they don't have, like their families don't have visas, so they can't come over and see them. Some of them have spent years without seeing their moms. Like, so I definitely empathize with them a lot when it comes to, you know, a first experience here.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Just, you know, something that sometimes goes by the wayside is just like they're by themselves in this new place. And a lot of them are so young, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just so young. And sometimes their education level is not as good. And like, it can be really frustrating at times if you allow it to frustrate you. But if you, you know, like you said, if you take that empathetic lens of just looking at it as like, you know, they're kids in a new place and a new job. And they, you know, they literally don't know what they don't know sometimes. And like, just laugh along with them. And then, like you said, once you learn Spanish and you realize how funny they are and like it changes everything for you. But if you're going to be in pro ball, like the Spanish is just so valuable. And even
it
when
is.
You move up, like, you know, I had Devers in AA when he was, you know, 19, 20 years old, whatever it was. And like, you know, now we're together in the big leagues and like just seeing him grow up and like being able to connect with him when he was so young and like, now he's a man with, you know, with a lot of money, like we say, and like You know what I mean? But just seeing him grow up, and we have some other young Latin guys coming up into the big leagues, and just having the ability to connect with them and you know, just give them a resource. Because as they move up, there's more on their plate. There's more media. There's more meetings. There's more everything. And like, if you can just guide them along, you know, on the path, like it's only going to help you. Like, it's not going to hurt you. And it's definitely like a worthwhile investment of your time to learn it. So couldn't agree more with you. And like I said, they're really funny once you get to connect with them.
They are.
How about continuing education resources, books to read, seminars to attend, podcasts to listen to? Like, where are you going to stay on top of things?
Yeah. So books I've read more recently, or that I'm in the process of reading. I read Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. I'm sure that you get that a lot. Definitely recommend that book. I was running polls the other day, and instead of running 10 polls, I ran 12 because I was like, David Goggins would want me to run 12.
You shouldn't be running polls. Don't you know that?
I know, right? And then Atomic Habits I'm reading right now. And then I also just finished a book called The Unfair Advantage. It's written by a pastor. He's a non-denominational Christian church in Tampa here, a local church that, but I felt the book was very relatable in terms of like, we have to leverage every opportunity we have. And although we might not like the cards we've been dealt, like we have to use it to our advantage. And then as far as podcasts, a big one that I like is Chasing Excellence by Ben Bergeron. He is a CrossFit guy, but he does talk about a lot of like general health stuff and stuff like that. So I think that he's a good resource to have regardless.
Gotcha. And then any seminars that you'd recommend? You ever been to winter meetings?
I haven't. I want to go. Yeah. As far as seminars, I haven't been to many seminars actually. No, I need to.
That's okay. All right. So as we get to the end here, obviously I always like to finish with a lightning round, and then I'll get you out of here. Four questions. I may add a little at the end. Like I said, I want to talk Charleston stuff.
Yes.
But you have time for me for the lightning round?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. So long or as short as you want. First question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
I think I would probably have to say Eric Cressy. I don't know if anyone runs a better internship program than him. Before I went, I had to learn like 800 different exercises, all of these in services, and I think he really could be a doctor if he wants, like if he wanted to.
He's you're probably not alone in that thinking. There's probably hundreds or thousands of people that probably think the same. If you only had one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Probably a kettlebell. Versatility, you can do a lot with it. So that's my go-to, I would say.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
I would say just getting my dream job straight out of college at 21 with the raise. Like I said, it was the only adult job that I've ever had. And I think I started in a good spot, developed a good foundation from that. So,
yeah, winning the championship stuff. any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
I would say either a physical therapist or something with animals. So very different. I love all types of animals. I think like maybe probably not a vet because I don't like the sad parts of it, but maybe like running an animal sanctuary with like hundreds of dogs and cats and horses and goats just roaming about and taking care of them.
Sounds like my wife. And chickens. If you add the chickens in, yep, that's her dream.
All of them.
Okay, so talk to me about Charleston. So I was born in Charleston, and never been. We left when I was 6 months. It's very high on my list of places to visit, and it's like embarrassing for me that I haven't been yet, and I'm, you know, in my early 30s now. So talk to me about the city, like, you know, any food that you'd recommend. Like, if you're telling me, like, as a first-time visitor, like, what do I got to see when I go? What do I got to eat?
You should definitely go. I love it. It's very quaint. The streets are very walkable. There's a lot of like horse and carriages, and like it's very like there's a lot of history there. There's a street called King Street, where it's just like tons of shops. You can spend the whole day on that street. There's a bunch of like nice little parks. I'm lucky that for living situations with the Rays and the River Dogs, like I was across the street from the stadium. So that was really convenient. I used my car maybe like 3 times. I like that it's really close to the beach too. It takes you like 15 to 20 minutes from the stadium to get to the beach. So that's a really good restaurants. It's definitely a foodie city. I like this place called Verde that has like all of these different salads. You kind of build your own salad. We only really have Monday off, so I don't do that much eating out besides on that Monday, but it's definitely the place to be. The stadium's electric. We're pretty much like full every game, and compared to every other affiliate that I've been to, like nothing compares to it. Like the amount of fans that we have, the presence, like it just adds a whole other element to it. And it's really exciting. It's definitely an exciting place to be.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about it. And specifically with the River Dogs, you know, my dad has told me about, you know, Charleston and all of this. And I've never been, and it's always been on my list. And like every year driving down to Fort Myers for spring training, I'm like, I should stop. And then I'm like, I'm in driving mode, and I'm like,
I know you can't get out of that sometimes.
next year. And then like, you know, it's 8 years later and you're like, I still haven't gone. Like I really should go. So definitely high on my list. And if we do ever end up going, I may get in touch with you for some.
Yeah, definitely. I have a list of places to go. So
awesome. Cool. It's been nice to get to know you. And if the listeners want to get in touch with you, where should they go? Is social media the best place, or is there a better place to get in touch?
Social media is good. I'm on LinkedIn. Also Instagram. My Instagram is just at mia.salvamini, but either works, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever.
Awesome. Mia, I appreciate your time. And like I said, getting to know you a little bit, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Yes. Nice meeting you.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude this episode with Mia. I hope you enjoyed this one. She's already accomplished so much in her young career, and I'm really looking forward to just following her and seeing where she ends up, over the years, whether it's in professional baseball or not. And she's also killing it on Instagram. She's an absolute beast in the gym. So it was cool to get to know her. It was cool to talk shop with her. And to hear about her success that she's already been having as a coach and like I said, in her young career. So three things that I took from Mia in this episode: adaptability and creativity will help you find success as a coach. Strive to be a good coach and a good human being, and be open to learning something from everyone. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.